Hi, this is Kendra Brodeen, founder and CEO of WomenLawyersOnline.com, and today I am delighted to bring you a conversation with Rhonda Miller. Since 1995, Rhonda has been practicing law and providing customized estate plans, business entity plans, and asset protection programs. Rhonda has been busy building her compassionate, personalized, and novel style of practice to suit the needs of her growing list of clients. This list includes clients in California and Virginia, as well as those who have businesses in other states. Rhonda is a Pennsylvania native, and she is also a proud graduate of the Pennsylvania State University, PSU, and a loyal football fan. After graduation from PSU, she headed to Southern California, where she studied at Loyola Law School. During law school and while she studied for the California Bar, she clerked for the Los Angeles District Attorney's Insurance Fraud Department. Upon admission to the California Bar, she moved from the DA's office to the firm of Perona, Langer, and Beck, where she worked on plaintiff's insurance and business litigation cases. With her specialized knowledge of insurance and issues facing business clients, she moved to the firm of Holland, Schechter, and Feinstein, where she worked on a variety of business law cases and insurance coverage issues on behalf of various Fortune 500 companies. Rhonda is a member of the California, Virginia, and District of Columbia state bars. She believes strongly in the importance of staying on top of the latest changes in the law, as well as the newest ways to save her clients money. She is a proud member of Wealth Council, Lineberg Listserv, and the Northern Virginia Estate Planning Council. She lives by a strong personal philosophy that it is important to give back to your community. She is a member of the Soar Optimist International, a nonprofit that raises money for women and children's causes. She also serves as a board member and pro bono general counsel for Canine Support Teams, a nonprofit that trains dogs to work with disabled individuals. In 1999, she established the law offices of Rhonda A. Miller. Her practice is devoted to customized estate planning, business entity planning, and asset protection. Rhonda frequently conducts training seminars and has been a featured speaker for State Farm Orange County Regional Agents Meeting, Citibank, First Financial Services, Edward Jones, and Brea Chamber of Commerce. She is a frequent contributor to consumer and trade publications covering the latest changes to both federal and state insurance, tax, and estate laws. Rhonda and her husband, Jeff, who is a retired officer of the Marines, live with their two young children and their much-beloved dog, Natalie, in Northern Virginia. So, Rhonda, I am so grateful for your time and for having this conversation with me today.
I'm delighted to be here and speaking with you.
Great. Well, let's jump in then to the questions that are forming the basis for our conversation here today. And just in looking back, sort of starting with that look at your background and at your personal history, would you say that you feel that you've always been adept and sort of capable of having the work-life balance that you wanted in your life? Or was there a moment in time or a pivotal event where you feel like you made a very conscious decision to become more intentional toward your work-life balance and integration?
Well, I think that I was a workaholic, and I spent a lot of hours at my law firm, especially my first law firm. And I remember right before I got married, sitting in the office of one of the partners, and, you know, he looked at me and he said, you know, are you sure that, you know, this is what you want for your life? And he says, you know, you're a great lawyer, you're smart. He says, you're one of the smartest lawyers I know. And he says, we're happy to have you here, but is this what you want? And he really made me think. And I went off and on my honeymoon, and believe it or not, I got a phone call from my secretary who needed something. And, you know, it makes you kind of think you can't even get away. And over the next couple of years, I started asking a lot of women lawyers who, you know, had children and, you know, I asked questions, you know, how do you balance your life? And some of them didn't. They had nannies, and their nannies would bring their children to have lunch with them at the courthouse, or they just kissed their children goodnight. Other ones had husbands that stayed home. Some of them worked part-time, and a part-time lawyer, what I understood, worked 40 hours a week, which is still a pretty full-time job. Some of them dabbled in the law where they worked one day a week. which I knew wouldn't be for me. And, you know, I just kind of ran the gamut, and I kind of saw what my choices were, and some chose not to have a family. And I had to make a decision, and, you know, I had to say, okay, what was going to work for me? And, you know, my husband and I talked about it, and we looked down the road and said, okay, when would we like to start a family? What would work for us and what we decided would work for us? And what we decided would work for us would be to, for me to go into my own business. And one of the things that I did is when I was working for my second firm, is I was thinking ahead, and I think that that's very important. You need to think ahead. I signed a contract, but I said in the contract that any business I brought into the firm, if I left the firm, it came with me. So when I left my firm, I walked out with business. So I didn't walk out with nothing. I walked out with business. And I started my own firm, and I had already planned on what I was doing, and I worked out of a room in my house, and I had a couple of years to get things going before we started our family. So, I was a workaholic who I think had a very smart man take a look at me and say, are you sure this is what you want to do? And then I decided, no, it wasn't.
Wow, the fact that he asked that question, it seems like that was a moment, that was a pivotal moment to even have that question presented to you at that time in your practice and in your life when you were just getting married. It sounds like it really got the wheels turning in your head.
In some ways at that moment, I was angry at him. I thought, how dare you ask me this question? Would you be asking me this question if I was a man? I mean, I didn't say this, but this was what was going on in my head. But it got the wheels turning. And I came back years later, and I thanked him for asking the question. I said, at the moment, I wouldn't have thanked you. But, you know, when I look back, I thank him, and I thanked him years later. I said, if you wouldn't have asked me that question, I'd still be a workaholic.
Right.
I would have never thought that I maybe would have had a different choice.
Yeah, I can see where that question would have been almost mildly offensive at first, especially as a young person, younger sort of attorney, and thinking, like you said, would you have asked this if I was a man? What are you thinking? But I can't handle this. But in the big scheme of things, it sounds like it was a very powerful question for him to ask you at that time. Wow.
Yes.
So you did have a moment, and then it sounds like a couple of years after that, but sort of a very colorful memory for you of a moment when that got you thinking.
Sure.
Wow. Okay. So since then, what would you say has been your biggest challenge or your largest struggle as you've tried then, based on that question, the contemplation you did after that, and the creative way that you found to have your own practice from home, what would you say that your biggest challenge has been in creating that sort of balance and that kind of both legal and personal success?
Well, I think, for anyone that goes into business for themselves, the first challenge you have is, well, how do you get the business? I mean, they don't train you how to market your business in law school, and we don't come out of law school knowing how to market. And, I was, again, very fortunate with my first firm having a lot of wonderful partners who I was able to call up and say, I need a little help. And they took me to lunch, and they paid for it, which I thought was great. And they said, this is how you market a law firm, and they gave me some great advice. And then I had a very good friend of my husband's whose brother was an extremely successful attorney, who gave me a half an hour of just, he talked and I listened, and I think he gave me the best advice I've ever heard. And he said, whatever you do, you pick a niche that you want to work on, and no matter how tempted you are, because you need money, and trust me, people will come in and say, can you do this? And he said, the answer is yes, you can do it. You can practice any area of law. Stay in your niche. You say no. He said, you're better off marketing your niche, sticking in your niche, and doing what you know than spending 20, 40, 60 hours trying to learn something so you can earn $3,000. He says, you're wasting your time. And that was the best advice I had, and that is some of the best advice that I can give. do not go out of your niche. Do not practice what I call and what I've heard called door law, which means you take any client that walks in the door with a checkbook. Hmm. Pick a niche, stay in your niche. And I think that was excellent advice. And then some other advice that I got is market doing the things that you love. If you like to sing, join a choir, and people find out you're a lawyer, and, you know, I do estate planning. Everyone needs an estate plan. So before you know it, people you're singing with, and I happen to like to sing, will hire you. And that's exactly what happened. You know, through my activities, my charitable activities, when I was in the Soroptimist, I wound up meeting people. I didn't do that to get business. I did it because I wanted to do it, and I enjoyed it, and business came as a result of it. And just being active in your community. I also listened to every tape I could get my hands on when it came to marketing, and I used to put them in the car, and I never listened to music in the car. I listened to, you know, any CD and books on online and everything I could. And now, you know, obviously you can download them to your iPod and you can listen to them differently, but I listened to whatever I could on marketing. And you talk to other successful sole practitioners and you find out what they did to make their practice work. And I did all of that. Now, I couldn't afford to have an office. I thought an office was a huge waste of money. So one of the things I did is I marketed myself as the lawyer who makes house calls. People loved it. They loved the fact that I'd come to their home. I liked it because I didn't have to pay for an office. I joined a local chamber of commerce who had a beautiful conference room. They said if I needed to use a conference room because a client didn't want me to come to their house, I could use their conference room. So I had a conference room when I needed it, and I had people's homes. And I never worked through the Yellow Pages, or I never advertised. So it was always by-mouth referral. I never felt uncomfortable going to someone's home. And it really worked for me, and it helped me keep my expenses down so I was able to make a profit. And then once my business was really going and I was really able to, I had enough money to be able to rent an office, I rented an office, and I have to tell you, they were very disappointed when I stopped making the house calls.
I'm sure they were.
I was very happy to stop driving around.
I'm sure that's true, too.
Very disappointed. But, again, you know, it's a matter of just figuring out, you know, what do you want to do, what works for you. I liked working out of my house. By that, you know, I had my daughter, my third year of private practice. I used to plop her in my office and, you know, the bouncy seat or, you know, the little circular thing, and she'd sit in there and play with her stuff, and I could work. And, I mean, I was fortunate to have very good babies, and they were very easy, and I only needed to have a nanny when I needed to go out. And I tried to make a lot of appointments nights and Saturdays. My husband worked a four-day-a-week schedule, so he was always off on Mondays, so I had Mondays available. And it really worked. We were able to make our life work.
It sounds like with you were able to be very creative in what worked for you and what worked for your family and really what worked for your business, too, and think in creative outside-the-box ways in order to find that kind of balance that you were seeking.
Well, I mean, I think that that's pivotal. I mean, I think that's very important, but I also think, you know, I've been in business for myself for 11 years, and what worked when my children were little didn't work as they got older, and my children are now 5 and 8, and, you know, they're in school, and we now, you know, we don't live in California anymore. We live in Northern Virginia. My husband has a completely different job, and he's in a different job market and a different industry, and I'm in a different different legal area where, you know, it's not quite, you know, practicing law in California is a little different than practicing law in Virginia. So I've had to change my practice. I've had to change the focus of my practice. And the needs of your children when they're babies are very different than the needs of your children when they're in school. And they have activities. And suddenly my husband and I are two ships that pass in the night. each of us have a child in the car, taking them to their individual activities. And it's different. And now we have homework, and you know, there's different needs. So again, I've had to change my practice. And I found that, you know, I have one client that is my primary client. I work 80% of my time goes to that particular client. And then I have other smaller clients that I work for, and then I take on two or three private clients at a time. I don't have to do as much marketing. I can spend a lot more time doing work. I've gotten an excellent paralegal that I've hired, and she's worked with me for the last 3 years. I have a secretary that works for me, so I've brought on a lot more staff. You know, we've really changed as a firm. And we've grown because we've needed to. So what I would say is you have to look ahead. You have to say, you know, how is the market changing? You know, for example, the economic climate, that has affected everybody. I saw, you know, that coming, and I said, I better find one client in this particular area where I live, which is Northern Virginia. The government is the only place that is still hiring. So I made sure that I have some clients that work for the government because I know that they're going to get paid,
mm-hmm.
which means I'm going to get paid. And so I kind of, and I knew that maybe I wouldn't do as much estate planning. So again, you know, it's a matter of looking ahead and seeing the changes on the horizon and planning for the changes. And I think that you always have to make sure that you're planning. And now I'm looking 5 years, you know, ahead, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, my kids are going to be this age and this age. This is what they're going to be into. You know, this is where we're going to be. And, okay, I don't know, hopefully the economy will be much better. And then I have to look at the age of my main client. Will she be retiring? Will I be selling her business at this point? And you kind of have to plan on replacing that business. And so I think that you're always morphing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I've done. You know, for the last 11 years, my business has never stayed the same. I think I've kind of constantly been in motion, and I've constantly been changing. And I've always kind of been looking ahead to make sure that I can keep some sort of work-life balance.
Well, it sounds like you've always been very proactive, and even just thinking back to earlier in our conversation, when you mentioned that you, in your contract for working with that previous law firm, that you put in a clause that any of the clients that you brought in, you got to take with you if you left. I think that, to me, just listening to you, it showed that you always had that foresight to think about where you wanted to go, or maybe even just had an inkling that you might want to go, but to protect yourself and to have things in place so that if and when you were ready to make that change was ready to be made, that you had yourself set up to move into that next evolution, that next iteration of your life and of your practice.
Well, I think that, again, I've been very fortunate that I have some good friends who are very successful attorneys, have great law firms. I've gotten some great advice by some good mentors who have given me warnings. I've seen long-time partnerships fall apart. I've seen the best, you know, lawyers that have been the best of friends, have worked together for 20 years, suddenly decide they don't want to. So nothing, you know, you can't count on anything, and you always have to plan for every eventuality. And I think that seeing that and being told that, I got some very good advice, and I listened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I listened, and I think I was able to avoid making some mistakes. And so I just think that I was very fortunate to have some very, very good mentors. And the greatest thing that I think any young attorney can do coming out of law school is to find a mentor, let them go to lunch with them and pick their brain for 60 minutes and listen to anything they have to say. And then listen to what they actually have to say, because it can save you thousands of dollars in mistakes.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. There's sometimes that it's worth even just treating someone to lunch for however much that costs, but it saves you so much time and money and frustration down the line to either hook up with that mentor or that person just for 1 hour or 2 hours, or ideally, as it sounds like you've had as well, some other ongoing relationships too, where there's someone there who's been in the trenches for a while and who can give you some very solid advice. But to find that person and not feel like you have to go it alone, it can really save you a lot of headache and heartache and finances as well.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree. And I think, again, you know, everybody has to decide what's right for them. When you're deciding, you know, what is the right balance for you, you have to decide what your priorities are and what works for you. And I honestly think that what works for you when you're 30 may not be the same that works for you when you're 40 or when you're 50. It changes all of the time. And it changes through every stage of your life. So, you know, I think that you always have to be thinking ahead. And not everybody is cut out to, you know, work for themselves.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, and that's not always a good answer for everybody. And some people do really well working at law firms. And, you know, I realized after 4 years at law firms, I was not a very good employee. I don't like to be told what to do. I don't like to be on other people's schedules. I used to get very frustrated when, you know, the senior partner came in and handed me a motion and said, I need the answer, knowing full well that this motion sat on their desk for 2 weeks prior to them giving it to me. And I'm thinking, and what was your problem? And you know, and I just couldn't help being frustrated with that. And it would show on my face.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't like that attitude. And so I felt that I was much better at my own boss. Because then if my motion sits on my desk or something sits on my desk for 2 weeks, the only person I can be frustrated with is me.
That's right. The buck stops with you.
So, you know, it does. But there's all kinds of learning curves. And there's mistakes. And, you know, and then there's good and there's bad things about working for yourself. I mean, when you work for yourself, if you're sick and you don't work, you don't get paid.
That's right. That's right. I think it is, like you said, it's just finding what works for you and being proactive about it, or at least being open to those possibilities as well and thinking about the future, not just constantly being reactive, but being proactive in thinking what you want or what you even could foresee yourself wanting so that you're protected and ready. And then just being honest with yourself. If something's not working, say in your practice, or if you feel like you're ready to do something different and create a situation that works better for you, to have the courage to do it, as you did, and step out there and make something that works for you, works for your style of practice, of getting work done, of how you interact with others, but really create that kind of practice that works for you and for your personality.
I agree.
I feel like you've just named so many important lessons and strategies, going from just tactical things like using any sort of drive time as a bit of a mobile classroom in terms of popping in a CD or other opportunity for learning, and even the same thing could be said for, you know, when you're exercising or taking a walk or anything, you know, to have an iPod or something. But those are amazing opportunities for learning, and like you said, just to put in a marketing tape, learn from people who have been out there and know what works, and you can just use that time on the road in a really efficient way, because yeah, we are juggling and our time is at a premium. So rather than go off and attend a conference or something, why not just pop it in your car and use that drive time effectively? And in terms of just going back, the advice that you received about picking that niche and keeping it and sticking with it. And I love the idea of having the door law. I haven't heard that before, anyone who walks in the door, but it's crucial advice in terms of picking that niche and sticking with it, sticking to your guns and staying in that place and then becoming known as the go-to person in that area.
Well, it's much more easy to market, I am an estate planning business attorney, asset protection attorney, which is what I do. These are what I do. And I mostly, I work with business owners, and I kind of take care of them from, all of their aspects. I do their estate plan, their asset protection, and I take care of their business. So I'm a one-stop shop, and that's my niche.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
That's what I do. Now, how could I possibly do criminal law, DUIs, divorces, bankruptcy? You just can't. And if you do that, you spend so much time trying to be pretty good at everything. I think you're a jack of all trades, master of none. And then you're marginally good at a little bit of everything. And you're a generalist, and you're not that good. And, I went to a seminar for the R, and there was a gentleman that used the concept, and he used the term door law, and I thought it was very funny. Mm-hmm. And he said, people are so, lawyers, especially small firms, are so desperate for money that they'll take anybody that walks in the door with a checkbook. But you can't do that. And that's exactly what my friend's brother said to me. Don't do it. Pick your specialty. Stick to it. And I'm telling you, when you're starting out and you are really hurting for money, and, my first year, I made just enough to cover my expenses until my first case settled, and then I had plenty of money. But that first year, I was like, okay, here we go. Balance my checkbook, zero. Every month, I had nothing. We lived totally off my husband's money. It was a rough year. I was very tempted to take cases that I wasn't comfortable doing, and I said no. And I'm glad I did, because I just spent my time marketing. I spent my time working on marketing materials. I spent my time listening and learning and figuring out what to do to attract more business into the door. And now it is so much easier to market than it was then, because you have, the internet is a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm, it certainly
is. And you have constant contact, and you have just so many ways that are just, really easy to do. Twitter and, blogging and these things, just they weren't there 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's much easier. And I think that your time is much better spent doing that sort of thing than it is, working on something you're not qualified to do, not to mention the potential malpractice or bar complaints that can come against you.
Exactly, exactly. And to become that person, that top-of-mind person, because you get known as the person who does X, Y, and Z and does it really well and focuses your practice on that, I think, like you said, it can be a struggle starting out and a huge temptation to become more of a generalist. At the same time, when a potential client is looking at a slew of 10 lawyers for an issue that they're facing, if one of them pops out as being the specialist in a certain area, that person will rise to the top. And so that's some of that, the wisdom in telling you or telling another lawyer to find that niche, because it does become so much easier to market. You know exactly what to talk about. You know who to talk to. People know that you are an expert in that area. But there are a lot of temptations early on, just because you have to pay the bills to expand and become more general in your practice. But it's golden advice. If you can stick to your guns and stick with that niche, it is golden advice. Well, Rhonda, I feel like that and so many of these other tips, I was taking lots of notes on my paper, in the margins, everywhere, just on things that you have learned from the experiences you've had in your own practice, from the wisdom of others that you have been so wise to connect with, to have those mentors. I think that is key advice as well, is coming out of law school or even in the middle of our practice, wherever we find ourselves in our career or in our personal lives for that matter as well, there are people out there who have gone before us, who have blazed a bit of a trail, who have fought through some of the challenges that we're facing or may face, and can give us the inside scoop on how to maybe avoid some of the landmines. And I think you were very smart to find those people in your own life, and I think you've given given the listeners and the readers of this interview some great advice to seek those people out, because it's amazing how much individuals want to help one another. I think we feel like, oh, well, I could never ask them. They would never give me an hour of their time or never want to be my mentor. I think sometimes people are very honored and want to share what they've learned, and they want to see other people avoid the pitfalls that they fell into. Did you see that with the folks that you connected with?
I think that, you know, I think with me, I think that I mostly had mentors for whatever reason I did. I had a lot of mentors in the beginning of my career. They were really wonderful to me. As I got older, I had more women mentors coming and helping me. Now I find that there's just a lot of us who just help each other. Here in Northern Virginia, there's a very strong members of the Fairfax County Bar Association, and we all just kind of get together and help each other and call each other and share documents and you know, I could call and say, I don't know how to do this, do you? And we help each other, and we're all sort of each other's competitors, yet we're all each other's helpers. So I do think that people will help you. You can't be afraid of ask. You know, there's plenty of business to go around for all of us. I think it's you know, kind of ridiculous to be afraid to ask someone because you think they're your competition. Mm-hmm. And I think that everybody is different, and we all have a different style. And the person who's going to be attracted to me as their lawyer won't necessarily be attracted to somebody else. I'm very hands-on. I'm very personable. I you know, really get involved with my clients on a very personal level, and they call me and we almost develop a very strong interpersonal bond. I keep my clients usually for their lifetime. Unfortunately, I also wind up attending their funerals, which is a very sad thing. Many other lawyers just like to have a little bit more of a detached relationship with their clients, and they don't like to have that kind of interpersonal relationship. I like it. Not everybody wants to have their lawyer kind of be more of that personal relationship in their life. You know, they don't want that. So I'm not the right lawyer for everybody. You know, I like that kind of relationship with my clients. I enjoy it. I have pictures of my children and my family in my office. You know, I like that kind of thing. My clients send me pictures of their children at the holiday time. I like that. I enjoy that kind of personal interaction. There are plenty of people just think, wait a minute, this is just a business deal. If that's what you want, I'm not your lawyer. But if you want more of a personal relationship, then I'm your lawyer. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there's, because we all are different, we have a different style, there's somebody for everybody.
That's exactly right.
And that's
right.
Why I think there's plenty of people to go around.
That's right. I completely agree. And when we can realize that, then it takes this fear and competitiveness. It just dilutes that when we realize that we can collaborate, that we can ask questions, that we can admit maybe when we don't know something and ask someone for help, and that those ideal clients for us are going to find us. If we're doing that solid job of marketing ourselves and getting our name out there and letting people know what we do, there are plenty of clients to go around, and we just have to trust that those clients with needs and styles that best fit ours, if we've done a good job in communicating who we are and what we do, we will find each other. And that will be a great relationship, and that there's not that kind of competition for clients that sometimes we feel like there is. We feel like there's only a certain number to go around. We have to know our ideal client and seek them out, and when they find us and we find them, like you said, it can be an ongoing relationship for as long as the client wants it to last. And I think it's beautiful that you've created
and
those
as
kind
long
of
as you want it to last.
I think so too. I almost said that, so I'm glad you said that. Thank you.
No, I mean, I believe that, you know, you need to know yourself. And, you know, I just had to go to a CLE class, and they were talking about, you know, the client. They called it the client from hell, and I hope I can say that word and not get you in trouble. And you know, we all get them. And I've gotten smart enough in my practice that when they come through the door and I do the initial intake interview, I price them right out of the market, and then make my pricing very unpleasant so they don't hire me, because I don't want the business. And I've also gone so far as when I get the business, I sometimes will say, you know, I don't think we're a good fit. Mm-hmm. I didn't do that. That was a mistake I made in probably the first 7 years of my practice. I would get them in. But now I've learned to gently say, you know, I don't think that I am the right person for you. Sometimes I've returned their money even after I finish their work just so they would go away.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you have to learn how to say no, because, you know, they need to be a good fit for you, and, you know, and it has to be both ways. Nobody deserves that person in their life.
That's
because
right.
You don't get a good work-life balance if you get that wrong person.
And if you dread your work because you allow those people into your practice. So thank you. Thank you for saying that.
They're the ones that keep you up at night.
That's right. That's right. And suck the fun and enjoyment out of what you want to be a fulfilling and meaningful practice. So I think it is, it kind of goes with that door law mentality of just feeling like we need to serve everyone all the time. But in actuality, when we can put some boundaries up around both what we do in our practice in terms of our field and our specialty, but also in terms of those ideal clients and who they are and who we want to allow to use our time, to spend our time on, when we can be very aware of who those people are that we want to bring into our practice, it makes for a much more enjoyable practice. And like you said, in the big scheme of things, it gives us that work-life balance, because we're not wasting our precious time and energy after we've sort of closed up shop for the day worrying about those clients that are giving us fits.
Well, my rule is if I stay up two nights in a row stressing about you, then you're clearly not a good fit for
me. Good rule. It's a good rule. Oh, Rhonda, I just appreciate the immense amount of both larger, more philosophical ways of thinking about things and also some really strategic, tactical tips that you've given over the course of this conversation. And gosh, as much as I love to continue the conversation, I think we both have those ideal clients to work with, probably. But
no, mine actually just walked in the door, so
well,
I need to go to
perfect this. Timing. Well, Rhonda, I really appreciate your time and your insights. And real quick, because I know your client's there, is there any sort of, would you like to give your website or give a place where folks could connect with you in the future?
My website is rhonda@rhondaforlaw.com. We have an info that you can always sign up. We have a newsletter that we send out, and they can always reach me through the info@rhondaforlaw.com. And I'm happy to speak further with anyone that wants to talk further. Love to mentor anyone.
That's very gracious of you and very generous. And, again, I just wanted to reiterate her email is rhonda@rhondaforlaw, and the 4 is the number 4, correct?
Correct.
Right, rhondaforlaw.com, and check out her website as well to learn more about her. Rhonda, thank you so much. I appreciate the time. I want you to get to that client, but I also wanted to just express my gratitude for you being here today and sharing an immense amount of information and advice with folks who are listening and reading your words after this.
And I appreciate the opportunity, and good luck with this project. I think it's super important.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Rhonda.
Okay, and bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. This is Kendra Rodine signing off for this conversation, wishing you success always in all ways. Thank you so much, and we'll see you again next time.